All right, so Dominique shared with us how they keep us coming back for more on the internet, Facebook, etc. So let's hear the rest of the story. Hyperreality. By the way, do you agree or disagree with him about, you know, since it's here to stay, and let's just be about the business of adapting to it. He shared with us why we should adapt to it and how we can truly use it for our best, for our common good. You need to hear the rest of what he has to say before you make a decision as to whether you agree with him or not. All right, here we go. The rest of his discussion on this.
Behaviorists know this, and they've already used it in real life. For example, at school, if you get 5 points just for showing up to class, those 5 points are based on a behavioral contingency, the idea being you would fear to lose those 5 points, so you show up to the class. Especially if 5 points is a lot of points in that class. I mean, you don't even know. Hyperreality might be able to take advantage of this as well by overlaying that information right in front of your face. This works for getting kids to go to class, but it can also work for getting people to raise money for a charity, or register to vote, to learn a mathematical concept by giving points at each stage, to understand the lifestyle of a different culture. If maybe you read about it, you get some points. We just need the tech to catch up. And there are some more examples that are used out there in real life. You can get points for brushing your teeth, you can get points for listening to the news, a high score for how long you've held a conversation with a friend, you can unlock achievements, for visiting new places, for challenging your worldview, or for trying new food. The options are really, really endless. You could even go the other way and say you have to pay points if you want to watch trash TV or skip a workout, or when you try and share fake news if it's actually fake news. Basically, we could use the behavioral psychology used by app developers, and we can use the reward system that we know we already have, and instead of applying it to come back to my website, watch my YouTubies, you could apply it to doing a good thing that benefits people in the real world. But of course, there's still a problem here, and that is addiction to the internet. What if back in the 1700s and 1800s, they were right about books? That they were right about how we were exaggerating the world 10 times more than reality, making the world seem somehow lesser? It's one thing if we do that on the page. It's another thing if we do it in front of our eyes all day, every day. I guess I'll just have to go see Ready Player One, but whatever. What if the digital world becomes better than the not digital world? What happens then? There's no real way to answer this, so if you have opinions and thoughts, you can tweet at us, at Seeker. But in some ways, there are kind of glimpses into this. Reality is messy, and you can't just control everything. But since digital is somewhat better than real, that's why a lot of people prefer text message conversations, right? If I can send you 5 words without worrying about micro-expressions or whether I'm sweating, you know, accidental spits or stutters or bad hair days or whatever it is, I can just give you the information that I want to give you, and I get no immediate rejection as well. I can just talk to you, and I don't have to worry about all of this messy reality. Virtual reality could be that same thing. What if it just becomes reality? I mean, you could argue that reading is better than not reading. Having a radio is better than not having a radio. Having TV is debatedly better than not having TV. The internet is debatedly better than not having the internet. I mean, I wouldn't have a job without the internet and TV, but that's, you know, just me being full disclosure. Having virtual reality could arguably be better than having regular reality. The lovely thing about this is that there is no answer. We're experiencing this now. This is the life we live. This is where scientists are trying to find answers to these questions about technologies and our brains and all sorts of stuff. We just live here. Evolutionary neurobiologist Leah Krubitzer told New Scientist, quote, "I can tell you for sure that technology is changing our brains." But so far, no one knows what those changes mean. What if this is just reading mania, but on a crazy advanced scale? Wouldn't that be awesome, but also terrifying? Of course it would be. But again, nobody knows the answer to these questions. Let me end on this. Jules Verne once wrote, quote, "Science, my lad, is made up of mistakes. But they are mistakes which it is useful to make because they may lead little by little to the truth." My hope is that we realize that by knowing we have internet obsession and by knowing that we have this reward system in our brains, we have a power and we can make rules so that we don't do harm, but we help. Our information obsession isn't going away. I have it. My family has it. My sister has it. That's a Star Wars thing. I don't actually have a sister. Anyway, it's everywhere. Information obsession is in everything. And what happens when it merges with our reality? Like, really, what happens? Nobody knows, but it could change the world. And it will. Again. Thank you so much.
I kind of think that we need to be prepared for the changes. I think that he has a point in that what's coming is coming. I mean, the people who are on top of the technology are pushing it. Virtual reality, artificial intelligence, the algorithms used to keep people addicted to Facebook and other social media sites, and on it goes. Now, one of the things that I think we need to keep in mind is our own power. There's no question that what's coming is coming, but we still have some say-so in just how much we interact with what's coming. Some people say, hey, look, you know what? You need to make sure that you're not just constantly listening to the news all day, every day, because it can be so depressing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, who has the final say in that? The people who push the news, or who push the propaganda and call it news, or the people who, well, watch the news, the people who broadcast the news, the actual newscasters? Who has the final say in how much news we actually watch or listen to, or both? Probably we, the individual, us. Do you feel empowered to say, hey, you know what? Instead of listening to and or watching 30 hours worth of news each week, I'm only going to watch 20 hours and or listen to 20 hours of news per week. If you decided that's too much, do you have the power, the freedom, the right, the authority, the ability to cut it down to 10 hours of news per week? And that's listening and watching, reading combined. I should have said reading, because whether we're reading it, newspaper that we're holding in our hands, reading it on the internet, however we're consuming it, reading it, listening to it on the radio, listening and watching on the TV, maybe watching and listening to video news feeds on the internet, on our smartphones, however we're getting it. Do we have the ability to cut it down to 3 hours per week? I'm just saying, if you wanted to, could you? If we wanted to, could we? Or would we really stuck on listening as much as they put it out there? Facebook, are you addicted to the social media? Or are you able to cut back significantly, not just maybe 2% of the time that you spend on your social media? Can you cut back significantly? Are you able to even start by saying, hey, you know what? Instead of spending 12 to 18% of my work time when I should actually be working at my job, instead of spending 12 to 18% of that time on the social media, I'm going to make sure that the only time I'm dealing with social media is during my lunch break. Or if I have a 15-minute break, during the 15-minute break. You can do this. All right. No need to be stuck if we don't have to be. All right.